Tom joins us now on the phone. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, good to be with you.
So let's start with Florida. That's the one that has really galvanized everyone, especially on the Democratic side, because Andrew Gillum pulled off a really, really big upset in the race for governor. Black progressive would be Florida's first African-American governor if he gets elected. He's got a tough opponent in Ron DeSantis, but Ron DeSantis is very much in the camp of Donald Trump. So to the extent that the 2018 election is a referendum on Donald Trump, this is going to be one of the most closely watched races, especially as big a state as Florida is. We've also got a very close Senate race in Florida between two very, very prominent candidates, and that one's going to be closely watched as well. So beginning with Florida, where do things stand?
Well, we find in the governor's race that Andrew Gillum is actually starting out with a 5-point lead, 48-43. I think there was a lot of question about whether he might have an electability problem. That was certainly something that was discussed a lot on Tuesday night, but at least initially, that doesn't seem to be the case. In fact, he's quite a bit better liked than his Republican opponent, Ron DeSantis. Gillum has a plus 18 favorability rating. 45% of voters see him positively, only 27% negatively. DeSantis, on the other hand, is underwater. 41% see him favorably, 45% unfavorably. So always good to take initial poll findings this close to the primary with a little bit of a grain of salt. Gillum certainly had a great 24-hour media cycle after winning this surprising nomination. But I think at the least what it looks like is that the race is going to be competitive. Definitely not a situation where the Democrats nominated a black guy, so now the Republicans easily going to win. And it's also important to remember in the context of people who I think are basically saying that Barack Obama won Florida twice. So
right.
I don't think there's any reason to think that inherently nominating a black candidate would mean that Democrats would lose in Florida.
So that's for the governor's race. And some of the numbers that you mentioned there picked up on the fact that Ron DeSantis has higher name recognition as well. And typically that tends to be an advantage for the not so well-known candidate. As we get closer to an election, people start knowing that person more, and that makes them more likely to be willing to cast their vote for them on election day. Do you see that being the case here too?
It's hard for me to see a world where Gillum would get up by too much more than five. But, you know, it's just a question as he becomes better known of whether people decide that they like him or that they don't like him. One thing that's sort of interesting about Gillum winning the nomination being so surprising is Republicans may not have all the ads lined up against him that they would have had lined up against the other Democratic candidates. Certainly they'll come, but it's a situation where you have to imagine if one of the people who Democrats are expecting to win had won, you might have seen those attack ads right out of the gate yesterday, and I think there probably wasn't as much preparation for the Gillum outcome. So it'll be interesting to see whether these favorability numbers can hold up once the cavalry comes in against him, which certainly I imagine it will soon.
How about the Senate race?
Very close Senate race. Bill Nelson, who's a three-term incumbent, is up 46-45 for the Democrats against the Republican Rick Scott, who's finishing up his second term as governor of Florida. This actually qualifies as a good poll for Nelson, sort of on the curve of polls that have been released in this race over the last 2 months. Most of them have actually had Scott ahead. There's a lot of speculation Tuesday night that Gillum winning the nomination is the best thing that ever could have happened to Nelson, because Democrats winning in Florida are very dependent on good turnout from African Americans, good turnout from young voters. Bill Nelson, as somebody who's been around a long time, frankly, an old white guy, a good guy, but still an old white guy, wasn't necessarily going to motivate African Americans and young voters to get out to the polls. Gillum, I think, has the potential to really be that motivating factor, and layered on top of that, people will vote for Bill Nelson as long as they're going out to vote for Andrew Gillum. So it'll be interesting to see if Gillum winning the nomination creates a shift in turnout that maybe takes the race from something where Rick Scott would have won the Senate race by a couple points to maybe something where Bill Nelson wins the Senate race by a couple points. Democrats are very worried about having to maintain incumbent senators in places that Trump won overwhelmingly this year, in places like North Dakota and Montana and Missouri and West Virginia and Indiana, they really can't afford to lose a senator in Bill Nelson in a state that Trump only won by a couple points. So it'll be interesting to see how this one unfolds, because if Democrats lose this race, they really have just about no chance of getting control of the Senate.
So that's going to be really closely watched. I know you're following a couple of other open Senate seats or contested Senate seats elsewhere in the country, too. How are things going there?
We recently did a poll on the Nevada Senate race. That's probably the most vulnerable Republican incumbent who's up for re-election, Dean Heller. And we found that he trails his Democratic opponent, Congresswoman Jackie Rosen, by 5 points, 48-43. And that's really about what you would expect to have happen. Nevada is a state that more often than not goes into the Democratic column, has voted Democratic 3 presidential elections in a row now. Dean Heller only won by a couple points in his last re-election, and he's really been criticized a lot for sort of trying to have it both ways on the Trump phenomenon. He sort of avoided Trump for most of the 2016 campaign, and now he's sort of more embraced Trump, and it seems like the net effect of that has been to antagonize everybody, so he has pretty low approval ratings. So I think that Nevada and Arizona are looking like very good pickup opportunities for Senate Democrats. Certainly they hope they can add Tennessee and Texas to that list as well. We recently had Ted Cruz with just a 4-point lead in his reelection against Beto O'Rourke in Texas, and there have been other polls showing that race very close as well. So there's a path for Democrats to get control of the Senate, but it certainly involves them winning in some places where they haven't done a whole lot of winning in recent years.
And of course, Arizona is a state where you've got an open Senate seat that's going to be contested in November. Of course, you've also got a seat that was vacated by the death of John McCain. There's going to be a Republican that fills that seat, but now the governor has to appoint someone to fill it, and there's a number of people that he could choose for that position. Is there any indication what people want in terms of someone to replace John McCain? Do they want someone like John McCain or someone different?
Well, we asked people, do you want a new senator who's more like McCain, or do you want a new senator who's more like Trump? And by a 61-37 margin, Arizona voters said that they wanted a new senator who's more like McCain. But one thing that was very fascinating within those numbers is that among Republicans, as venerated as John McCain has been, certainly on the national level, among Republicans in Arizona, 70-28, they said that they wanted someone more like Trump. So they sort of reject McCain's general approach to things. Democrats, on the other hand, say 95-4 that they would rather have someone more like McCain. So sort of an odd development, but the 2008 Republican nominee for president seems much more admired by Democrats in his home state than Republicans. And the other angle that was sort of interesting on this Arizona poll was we asked people, do you want your new senator to vote to confirm Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court or not? 46% said they would prefer their new senator oppose Kavanaugh. Only 42% said that they would prefer their senator support Kavanaugh. And that may be surprising. Arizona's been a Republican state for a really long time, but actually sort of an interesting dynamic. The country as a whole moved 2 points in a Republican direction from 2012 to 2016 in the presidential race. But while the country as a whole was moving 2 points in a Republican direction, Arizona moved 6 points in a Democratic direction. Arizona went from Romney plus 9 to Trump just plus 3, even as Democrats overall were doing worse. So Arizona is definitely shifting closer and closer towards that Democratic column. And it'll be interesting to see if this is the year where Democrats can finally get a major statewide win in either a gubernatorial race or a Senate race. They haven't won a gubernatorial race in Arizona since 2006, and they haven't won a Senate race in Arizona since the 80s or 90s. It's so far back, I can't think of the exact year. So it'll be interesting to see if this is the year that the tide turns.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, publicpolicypolling.com is their website. And again, you can find him on Twitter at PPP Polls. So let's bring it closer to home in North Carolina. And we talked about a lot of North Carolina-specific races and controversies last week. But one that we didn't talk about, although we have in the past, is this issue of partisan gerrymandering, which flared up again when earlier this week another lower court decision struck down the U.S. congressional district lines in North Carolina again as a case of unconstitutional partisan gerrymandering. Now we're awaiting a final verdict on that to know exactly what our elections are going to be like in November. But in the meantime, what do North Carolinians think about partisan gerrymandering? I know we've talked about that, but what is the impact of partisan gerrymandering on elections in North Carolina?
Well, North Carolina is a pretty 50-50 state, and we have a 10-3 Republican congressional map, so that really shows the extent to which Republicans have been able to bias the congressional seats towards themselves, despite the state being so closely divided. In some ways, that gerrymander is set up to potentially backfire on them this year, though, in a way that is kind of interesting. Basically, what you do with a gerrymander is you try to draw yourself as many seats with a 10-point advantage as you can, and you just assume that you're never going to have an election bad so year that so bad that if you lose by that, that it will not hold up that 10-point advantage that you drew for yourself in the lines. But we're in a situation right now where North Carolina and the country as a whole are in a situation where they're about 10 points more Democratic than they usually are. And what that means is that some of these Republican-drawn congressional districts that were never supposed to be competitive all of a sudden are looking like they very well could go into the Democratic column. The 9th Congressional District down in Charlotte, where Robert Pittenger lost in the primary to Mark Harris and the Democratic candidate is Dan McCready. The conservative Civitas Institute had a poll last month that showed the Democrat McCready up by 7 points. In North Carolina's 2nd congressional district in the Triangle, where George Holdings, the Republican incumbent, and the Democratic candidate is former legislator and two-time lieutenant governor candidate Linda Coleman, George Holdings said last week that his own polling has him down by 3 to Linda Coleman. And then the 13th district in the triad, where it's a first-term Republican incumbent, Ted Budd, running against a strong Democratic challenger who's raised a lot of money, Kathy Manning, that race is within 2 or 3 points, too. So sort of a funny thing where because Republicans got so greedy and drew themselves up these 10 seats that gave them about a 10 to 15 point advantage. Now, this year in this political climate, some of those ones with the 10 point advantage all of a sudden are looking very dicey for Republicans to be able to hold on to.
What does it mean if the lines end up having to be redrawn and we do the election of 2018 with new lines in a climate like this?
Well, there's really no way that the Republicans could get rid of a partisan gerrymander without Democrats winning at least some more seats. There's some proposed maps out there that basically I think would create 4 solid Democratic districts, maybe 6 solid Republican districts, and about 3 competitive ones, something like that. But I think no matter what, we're going to end up with voter confusion. There's a lot of unclarity about where we're heading, but I think one thing that's safe to say is that whatever form of chaos it is, it will be some form of chaos that I think will make it pretty hard for voters to keep track of what's going on.
I'll end it there. Again, publicpolicypolling.com is the website for more information. Find them on Twitter at PPP Polls. Tom Jensen, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.